that I want to focus on tonight. Myth number one, the main myth of tonight, is that a lot of people think that the Kabbalah is like here. Like Kabbalah is like mystical, philosophy, esoteric, stuff like that, yeah? And halacha is like on the other side. It's like practically what Jews have to do to be good Jews. But I believe, I'll give it away right now, that that is a myth. Okay?
You didn't even let us guess.
Okay, what do you guys think? You think it's a myth or it's true?
I think it's true.
I second
the
dear. I think it's true.
You're both very close to the truth. But actually, it's a myth. But the thing about a myth is that it's always got a little bit of truth in it.
It's true, which means it's still true just in its own way.
It's almost true. It's got truth in it, but it's not actually 100%
true. Are there ever going to be any lies?
There will be one day. I think I threw one in there once, but I'll do it again.
Does this class continue next semester?
Not officially. I believe officially it's done in two classes, but I don't really know what's going to be in 2 weeks from now. I might just give a different name for the same type of thing, or something like that might happen, which I think is like different name but same type of vibe. Different, yeah. Halacha something, but different.
You should guess if it's a myth or true, so that then you can guess.
That would, I had an idea of doing Torah debates and getting you girls to debate each other.
Oh,
it's a little
cool.
bit, it would be an experiment. I mean, I'd be very curious how it would come out, but that's an idea that I have, getting you girls, giving controversial topics and then letting you fight it out. I've tried to settle it in the past. We'll see if it goes this time. But anyways, we're off top. Kabbalah here and Halacha here. And what I want to show you is that now, these are actually intertwined, okay? And that Kabbalah makes its way into our daily halachic living. And we're going to kind of learn together about a lot of interesting Kabbalistic ideas which blend into halacha. Cool? Sounds good? Before I did that, I thought it might be kedai a tiny bit to talk about, like, what is Kabbalah? Have girls, like, already learned a lot about this? You already know a lot about this? Yes, a little bit. Okay, so I definitely won't go in depth, but just in case someone's not an expert. So when we say Kabbalah, so there's an idea that says Moshe kibel Torah misinai. Moshe received the Torah and he passed it down to Yeshua. Yeshua nevim vim anshei knesset gdola. So generally when that, we learn that Mishnah and Pirkei Avos, we think it's talking only about the written Torah, the Chumash, maybe the Gemara. But Kabbalistic understanding is that also refers to the mystical interpretations of the Torah. And if you read the Torah carefully, you see that there's a lot of crazy stuff in there that's like hard to understand. Like when Moshe sees the back of God, but not the head of God, and you're like, what is going on there? And it's certainly in Navi also, if you read Yecheskel, you read a lot of Nevi'im, you don't really know what's flying. Okay, there seems like there's something spiritual, something else going on there. So Jewish belief is that these traditions were passed down, okay? And eventually they make their way to Rabbi Akiva in year 125, the Bar Kokhba Rebellion, and the Romans are kind of killing Jews, and Jews are going to exile, and Rabbi Akiva passes it to this guy named the Rashbi, or Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai. We're actually going to go there on Motzei Shabbos, okay? So this can help you connect to him a little bit. And the Rashbi famously spends 12 years in the cave, right? You guys are familiar with the story in the Gemara. And that is, according to tradition, where he writes the first written part of the Zohar. Because Zohar is not the beginning of the Kabbalah. It's continuing that tradition. But it's like the main, you know, stop. Okay? And the reason he has to write it down is because otherwise it's going to get lost. And Jews are going to exile. So he writes the Zohar. If you open up the Zohar, I don't know if you've ever opened it up. It is very hard. I have no idea what I'm reading when I... It's very complicated.
Wait, Rashbi wrote?
Rav Shimon Bar Yochai.
He's
the one who, according to classic Jewish tradition, writes the beginning of the Zohar. It doesn't mean everything necessarily was by him, but he begins that process. Eventually, in the 12th century, it's still being passed down very secretly, only to, like, you know, some experts. Moshe Dilyon writes it down, and in the 15th century, this guy named, or 16th century, sorry, this guy named Rabbi Yitzchak Luria, or the Ari, the Arizal. Right? We're going to visit him in Sfat, we're learn all about him. And he is the guy who also kind of writes a commentary on the Rashbi, Eitz Chaim, and makes it decipherable, makes it understandable. He's the guy that writes, amongst other things, about reincarnation and all that stuff, and many other concepts. It's still very hard and complicated. Like, trust me, you can't just open it up and understand everything that's going down. Also, he doesn't really write much. It's his student, Reb Chaim Vitale, writes it. But he's like the next big chain in this Kabbalah, okay? After that, the Ramchal is another famous Kabbalist. You know, he wrote Mesilas Yesharim, Derech Hashem, right? You guys heard of this stuff, you know what I'm saying? And the last
is Madonna.
No. Myth or fact? What do you guys think? Myth or fact?
Sure.
Is she the last part of the Kabbalistic tradition?
Yeah.
True. Maybe you wouldn't put it there just to put it there.
So I actually think it is indeed a myth. What? She is not really part of this tradition. I hope she doesn't listen to this shir on YU Torah, but I don't really consider her part of that tradition.
So where does it come from?
Why not? Because I'm not saying that I got nothing against Madonna personally. I'm sure she's a great person. But there's a thing that's become popular nowadays, which is like commercializing Kabbalah, taking Kabbalistic.
Is she Jewish?
I think she converted. I'm not sure exactly how kosher it was. Again, I don't want to speak badly about Madonna. But the point is that there's a lot of people nowadays that take Kabbalistic concepts and use it to sell their brand version of Judaism, which could be nice and sweet and beautiful, but I don't think, if you're not keeping halakha, right, if you're dressing the way that Madonna sometimes dresses, you're clearly not so makben on halakha, and you're not in the camp of, you know, you go online, you're going to find all sorts of crazy new interpretation, just new age stuff. So this, I don't think, is genuine Madonna card of the Kabbalistic tradition. Maybe Aryeh Kaplan would be the best person on the chain. He was an amazing writer of Kabbalah in our generation.
Does he have a Kabbalah book? One of those, like,
he does. Books? He, if you really want to understand Kabbalah, I'm not saying you shouldn't, we'll get to the end of this year, but if you wanted to, he would be the guy to go to.
One of those, like, little ones? That, like,
it's a red book. There are a bunch of those also, but those are less on the Kabbalistic stuff.
So easy to read.
They're very good. I want to talk about those. Those are great. I'm a big fan. Yes.
Anyhow.
Your question, Dr.
Yeah, I thought I was
going to
say.
Just lost.
Sorry. Okay. No, oh, wait.
I should come back.
Oh my gosh.
I'm sorry.
No, it's fine.
It happens.
It'll come back.
Please, God. All right. Anyways, that's a little bit about Kabbalah. Now.
Oh,
yes.
I remembered it.
Okay.
Do Reform and conservative people, like, learn Kabbalah, or they don't like
it? Some of them do. Some of them do. I wouldn't say it's necessarily popular, but some people are into it. Even secular people. Is it a thing in Israel, secular people studying Kabbalah?
Is it called?
Even non-Jewish people calling Kabbalah. They study Kabbalah. They're the philosophy.
Kabbalah.
But there's all sorts of... Gershom Scholem is one of the most famous Kabbalistic interpreters, and he was not a religious Jew. So they're in Hebrew University. So there is a whole philosophy, just like there are non-religious Jews who study Talmud, and there are Koreans who study Talmud. But there are people who are connected to it. It does have hippies and people who are spiritual kind of connect to it. And that's definitely true. It's not a myth. But what I want to show you guys is that these are not two separate things. That Kabbalah has worked its way into halacha. And I want to posit that you can't really be a full halachic Jew if you reject the Kabbalistic tradition, because they have kind of meshed and become, they're not the same, but they're intertwined. Okay? So what's my biggest proof for this? Who are some of the biggest rabbis of halacha? Name some of the big guns, people who, like, changed the world of, who codified what does it mean to be a halachic Jew?
Rav Lerner,
okay, good. good name. All right, well, who else? Any other ideas?
Rav
Schechter, okay. Maybe go back a little farther than like our generation.
Ramban
and Ramban, okay, yeah. Yeah, for sure. You mentioned Ramban.
Yeah, because I think he was...
Okay, so he's worth mentioning. Chofetz Chaim, very good. Who else? So how about the Shulchan Aruch of Yosef Karo, right?
The Ramah.
I'm glad to see that.
And the Ramah. Very good. Okay. So that's great. We got a lot of names up on the board. Now, I could throw other people out there. I could throw Cook, for example. There are a lot of people out there.
They were all Kabbalists.
Which one of those people do you think were Kabbalists, were mystics? Study the Kabbalah.
He just gives.
Okay, so let's start with Rabbi Yosef Karo.
I don't know.
Rabbi Yosef Karo, I would say, would be at the top of this list. Rabbi Yosef Karo is the most important person in Halacha because he writes the Shulchan Aruch. Okay? He writes a standardized book which becomes accepted by Klal Yisrael. We're going to go to his shul on Shabbos. Maybe we'll even get to learn some Torah there. We'll see. And we'll see in the place where he wrote the Shulchan Aruch. And here's something that you didn't know. Listen to this. It's crazy. I have a book in my house. It's called Magid Meisharim. This is the book. It's literally the conversations of an angel speaking with Rav Yosef Karo about all sorts of crazy things, personal conversations about Torah, about his personal Avodas Hashem, and about many mystical concepts. And this is a real thing where Rav Yosef Karo felt like an angel was talking to him, and he writes this down in a book which I have in my living room, which they write, they translate it to English, which you could go online right now and read it. Okay? Magid Meisharim. Look it up. Okay? This is the founder of our halacha, the Beis Yosef, one of the most important geniuses ever, and he's got a chavrusa with angels telling him Kabbalistic concepts. Okay, this is not something that everyone knows, but it's not controversial. Everyone knows. It's like if you do any research, you know he has a whole book, and I've read it, and it's really fascinating. So he's obviously a big Kabbalist. Okay, a super huge Kabbalist, a super huge mystic. So let's start with him. Who else? Rav Schechter. Honestly, I have no idea if he's a Kabbalist. Rav Lerner, I don't know. I haven't asked him. But Ramban, absolutely. He writes in his commentary all the time Kabbalistic stuff that I don't know what he's talking about, but he's a huge Kabbalist. So that's myth number two that we're going to talk about at the end.
Wait,
did
you just tape away
that? Oh, not myth number. Maybe myth number two. Yeah, and see. Kept it going. All right, Chafetz Chaim. Let's start with him. The Mishnah Berurah is the Chafetz Chaim, right?
Yeah.
He wrote the Mishnah Berurah. Was he a Kabbalist? So he brings in Kabbalah all the time into his halachic works. I don't know if he was all day dwelling in Kabbalah, but he brings Kabbalah into his works and paskins it lamaisa. For example, I've been learning the Shulchan Aruch from the beginning this year, and they're one of the first halachas in the Shulchan Aruch. Is in the Mishnah Berurah, is washing your hands. So the Mishnah Berurah writes that ideally you should wash your hands close to your bed. Don't walk more than 4 amos. So they ask, why not? Why don't I just go to the bathroom and I wash my hands there? The Mishnah Berurah writes because the Arizal, who's a Kabbalist, says there's spiritual negative forces that go upon you. You want to get rid of the bad spiritual forces before you walk 4 amos. I'm not saying halacha l'maaseh, you have to be strict upon yourself to do that. It's a stringency. But you get what I mean when I say the Mishnah Berurah, the Chafetz Chaim, is bringing in Kabbalistic halachas all the time. Okay, that's one example of which we'll bring many. Okay, so Chafetz Chaim, sure.
Are women allowed to learn Kabbalah?
That's a good question. So let me put that for the end of this year too.
Okay.
We'll get back to women, and what was the other question? Anyone. Can anyone learn?
We have non-Jews.
No, can anyone say that they can?
Non-Jews. Non-Jews also, if we have time, we'll get to it about this time, next time.
Well, you said that non-Jews can all
do. They do. The fact they do doesn't really mean that we encourage it,
yeah.
But...
Wait, I have a completely irrelevant question.
Yeah.
Are we going to do a lot of walking on Shabbos?
Since that's a completely irrelevant question, come to me at the end of class, and we'll talk all about it. Okay. So, who else? Okay, so we mentioned Rabbi Yosef Karo. The Ramah, yes. You might say, it's only Sephardi. Rabbi Yosef Karo is Sephardi. No. The Aruch HaMoshe quotes Kabbalah all the time. Maybe you remember back a few, at the beginning of our semester, we talked about Kaparos. And you remember how we said that Sephardim were against Kaparos? And the Ramah, the Ashkenazi guy, said, no, Kaparos are good because of Kabbalistic reasons. Okay, so that's another great example of even us Ashkenazi folk, we're studying the Kabbalah and it made its way sometimes into halacha. Rav Kook, well, you know, I mentioned him, but yes, he is a master in not only halacha, but also he was Kabbalah. In fact, one thing that people don't realize about Rav Kook, he wasn't just a founder of the religious Zionist movement, he was one of the biggest geniuses in both halacha and in Kabbalah, and in philosophy. That was what was unique about Rav Avraham Yitzchak HaKohen Kook, in that he wasn't just really good at one thing, like a lot of people, like, oh, I know halacha really well, or I really know this. He was really, really good at almost every facet of Jewish philosophy, and that was one of the reasons that made him so unique. But he's certainly a Kabbalist. He's the guy who said that nowadays, like, you can't really, what I'm saying, you can't really have halacha without Kabbalah in our generation. So, yeah, a lot of rabbis knew Kabbalah. Good. I think I proved my point. But what about in practice? Do we see Kabbalistic practices making their way into our daily Jewish life? So, let me put it out there. What do you guys think? Can you think of any Kabbalistic things, which halachot, minhagim, this and that, which have made its way into our mainstream Judaism?
I don't know if it's Kabbalistic, but maybe going on your heels 3 times when you say Kaddish,
Kaddish, Kaddish. Oh, that's fascinating.
I don't know if it's Kabbalistic.
I don't know either. I'm going to guess it is. It feels like one of those things. It is, I'm trying to remember, is it mentioned? It is mentioned in the Mishnah Berurah. So it's a real thing, not a myth. I don't remember what the source was. So
okay.
Could be. Put that on the maybe category. Yeah, what else?
It's in like when you get up in the morning and you like wash your hands because like your soul like went up to Shemayim and it like come back down. It's like on your fingertips.
Okay, so this is a good example of yes and no. No, it's not from the Kabbalah because this washing your hands is mentioned in the Gemara. Okay, it's mentioned in the Gemara that we have a Ruach Ra, a bad spirit, and we wash off that bad spirit. And that's one of the reasons. The other is because to feel like we're a new person. And when we wash our hands, like the priests used to wash their hands in the basement, maybe that's just kind of like psychologically psychs us up for the day. So no, but yes. Why yes? Because A, even the concept of Ruach Ra, even if it's not in the Kabbalistic works, but that's like a mystical concept. What do you mean? An evil spirit. Like, that's very spiritual. So that's actually a great example of how there's spiritual stuff in the Gemara, too. If you learn Gemara, you see there's a lot of weird spiritual stuff, and that might be connected to Kabbalah. And here's the other point that's relevant. Kabbalah gives other reasons for why we wash our hands, and because of those other reasons, it ends up impacting our daily lives. So, for example, I've already mentioned, four amos. The thing about not walking four amos is a Kabbalistic concept, okay? Here's another example of how Kabbalah influences, we'll get to your Segal in a moment. So take Mayim Achronim, okay? If you guys familiar with Mayim Achronim a little bit, right after the meal, you wash your hands a little bit. Some people do it and some people don't, right? You know what I'm talking about? So why not? Why do some people do it and some people not do it? And then girls don't do it or do it. We talked about this yet, maybe a little bit. I actually should have been. This is also a good halachic myth topic. There's no real difference between girls and guys in this topic. Just people think that there's a difference, but there isn't a real difference. But here's what it comes down to. The Gemara says you have to wash your hands at the end of the meal. It's in the Gemara and Brachos. Okay? Why? Seemingly for cleanliness. That's a seeming idea. You want to bench to Hashem and be clean. So you wash your hands before you're done with the meal. This is a sugya, brought down all the Rishonim, and the Shulchan Aruch paskins Mayim Achronim Chova. What does that mean, Mayim Achronim Chova? What does Chova mean, girls? Chova means obligation. It's actually, you must wash your hands. So now you're thinking, wait a second, I'm in trouble. I knew I shouldn't have come to this class. And more things I have to do. Because who here, you girls, wash your hands before you bench? Probably not. Okay, most people don't. So why not? If the Shulchan Aruch says, yeah, because comes the Ramah and says, no, it's okay. Tosfos says that in the olden days they had dangerous, called Mayim Stomit, dangerous water, maybe from Yam HaMelech. We don't have it anymore. We're not worried about washing our hands. And therefore, we don't have to be strict about washing our hands before we bench. Unless your hands are really dirty, you don't have to wash your hands. Okay? You with me so far? Hold on, one more thing. And because this is a great example. Comes the Mishnah Berurah,
not only Shmir, but also Kabbalistic, the Vilna Gaon. And the Vilna Gaon says, nah, wash, even today. Why? I thought we just said you don't have to, it's not relevant. He said, no, because according to the Kabbalah, there are other reasons why we wash our hands at the end of the meal. There's negative, called klipot, negative husks, negative bad forces that go upon you, maybe because you had this animalistic spirit when you were eating, and you wash that off of you, and then you can bend. So even though in the Gemara it gives one reason, he says that it's Kabbalistic reasons that are not given, and therefore we should be strict upon ourselves and do mayim achronim. Okay? So that's why you'll see some people who are maybe more Sephardi or more Kabbalistically inclined, or maybe go like the Vilna Gaon, will wash their hands. I wash my hands before I bench. And other people, especially Ashkenazi folk, do not wash their hands, and that's okay too. And I don't know why girls in general don't do it. It's one of those halachic myths that for some reason girls just didn't do it. Maybe they weren't eating with the guys, I don't know, but there isn't actually any difference between girls and guys. It just goes by who you're going by. But here we see how the Kabbalah did influence the halacha of Mayim Achronim, and it worked its way into halacha. Yeah.
This might be like a stretch, but it's like a question. It's not. But you know, like there's like midrash in the Torah, like to like explain things.
Yeah.
Is Kabbalah like obviously not the same like midrash and like halacha and like why we do certain halacha?
Yes, it's not a stretch. It's exactly one of the reasons, one of the arguments given by those who are very in favor of learning Kabbalah or some degree of Kabbalah, is that they say that it brings meaning to many of the mitzvahs. It gives another layer of explanation that that sometimes a dry halacha might not. And therefore, they would say it's important for people to study Kabbalah or at least be exposed to Kabbalistic ideas to get a deeper, more spiritual understanding of Judaism, especially in our generation, because our generation struggles with Judaism more than any other generation in the history of the world. And that's actually the Kabbalistic explanation as to why we're allowed to learn Kabbalah nowadays, because our generation needs these spiritual explanations more than previous generations. Yeah? I'll give you a great example, since you, it's a dynamic shir. You ask good questions and different buttons get pushed in my head. So take Chazarat HaShatz, right? Listening to the Chazan after davening. Why do we have to listen to the Chazan if we just already did that ourselves?
That.
It's a good question, right? Well, what's the point of that? So, as you guys know, I love the Panini Halacha. And the Panini Halacha brings not only the simple explanations, but even the Kabbalistic explanations. The simple explanation is, in the olden days, they didn't have sitters. Okay? They didn't know it by heart. Some people may have known it by heart, but not everyone read back then. So people weren't necessarily able to daven on their own. So you had a chazan who covered everybody. Okay. And so why do we do it nowadays? We have a sitter? Since that's what the tradition for hundreds of years, we continue the tradition and we don't get rid of Chazarat HaShatz. And plus we get to say Amen and Kedusha and all these other beautiful mitzvahs. So we just do it. Okay? Comes the Kabbalistic explanation and says, no, there's a whole different layer. And that's the following. There's one tefillah of Hashem that we must do as individuals. And there's a higher level of davening when you kind of nullify your own thoughts. You listen to the chazan and you say amen. You're actually joining into the community. And that is rectifying your soul on even a higher level than your own personal prayer. Okay? So that's a very sweet, beautiful explanation, which is going to give our next Chazarat HaShatz hopefully a little bit more meaning. And that comes from the Kabbalah, right? That's not in the Gemara. So that's a good example of how, you know, of the argument of in the Kabbalistic camp of why it is important to at least be exposed to certain Kabbalistic ideas. Okay? Cool? All right, so let's get through a few more Kabbalistic ideas which kind of come into our lives. What else? Any other ideas?
Something with Adela. I just feel like there would be something
with
Adela.
There's something with everything, Tassas.
Dipping your fingers.
Oh, wow.
I'm just doing what you don't know.
Because that's a Sephardi thing,
it's
probably, yeah, I mean, yeah, it's not, it's just a lot of Sephardim do it, astronomical.
I feel like a lot of things
especially Sephardi. It's probably Segulistic, which means it's probably Kabbalah.
That's
but
what
I
meant.
I don't know. I
feel like a lot of Sephardi things are like.
Yes. No, in general, it's true. Sephardi were and are more connected to the Kabbalistic.
Can you give a hint for another
one? Yes. I'll give you a lot of hints. Think.
Oh, wait. I have one.
Okay.
Actually, I don't know if this is one, but. I mean, sorry. I totally didn't want to
cut
you off. But like, it's like how you're supposed to like hold a Kiddush cup and like as like. Like your hand around it as like a rose or something?
Like an atara.
Yeah.
Like this.
Yeah.
No. Yes and no, as always. Why yes and no? Because the Gemara is the source for being ma'ater your cup. But here's why it's yes. The Gemara does not define what it means to do an atara. You notice that sometimes people put a little cup around the cup. Like a little plate on the cup. And some people have those cool things where you have one cup and you have all those little cups surrounding it.
Those are so
yeah,
cool.
Yeah.
I know,
they're
super
though.
Cool. But that's for kiddush. They want to be ma'ater. They want to do an atara around the cup. But another explanation is that the Mekadesh holds it like this, Kabbalistically. Exactly. So, correct. That would be how Kabbalah, you know, as we're seeing a lot of times, Kabbalah is not just about different practices, but explaining the meaning behind a lot of practices and also giving new interpretations of certain practices.
Can you give another hint?
Think Shabbos. Think Shabbos, because Shabbos is when it gets really Kabbalistic with the Jewish people. There's a lot of Kabbalah and Shabbos hint that have...
Shabbos is so broad.
A lot of Kabbalah and Shabbos.
Does this have to do with meals?
Think carefully about the hints I'm giving.
Something with his.
No. When you wrap up.
There's a lot of Kabbalah in Shabbos. Ramanus Makaba.
Shabbos.
Oh, very good. Kabbalah Shabbos. Kabbalah Shabbos.
Yeah, that's what
you get it?
No. Why does he end when
I'm
okay.
Okay.
Guys, we're
okay.
Really good.
So, this you'll hear more about on Shabbos. I won't go too much on it, but I can't not mention Kabbalah Shabbat. It happens to be. A personal favorite. Can you think where our generation would be if we didn't have singing Shabbos into our lives? Like, I don't know how many Yidden would not be Yidden anymore
if not for singing
Kabbalah Shabbat. But where did it begin? Who started Kabbalah Shabbat?
Field.
In the fields of?
Somewhere, probably up north, let's be real. I did this in your other class. I was better the first time.
Okay, I mentioned it before. It's okay.
No,
it was a long day. I don't blame you. It's okay. You heard a lot of my voice. So it began actually not in Sfat. It began in the Gemara. In the Gemara, it talks about a rabbi who go out to the fields and gather and welcome Shabbos. But fast forward 1,500 years or so, and there's this rabbi named Rabbi Yitzchak Luria, the Arizal. And he has this idea to go out to the fields of Tzfat, okay? And I told you that story, right, where I went around to Davin and ended up in the exact spot that he brought Shabbos in. And he says, not good enough to just welcome it in with like a little, you know, hey Shabbos, we need to sing. And there's another rabbi named Rav Shlomo Alkabitz, okay? And he'll come up also on Shabbos. And he writes the... Right? He writes the Lechadodi.
I love Lechadodi.
It's a great song, yeah? So he is the man who comes up with Lechadodi and other songs, and together they have this revelation. Literally, he had a dream at night, and it becomes clear to them, we need to bring this concept of singing Shabbos, welcoming Shabbos with song and psalms and six psalms, like the 6 days of the week, and that was the evolution of Kabbalah Shabbat. Until honestly, the story continues until this guy named Shlomo Carlbach in the 60s comes up with all these tunes and kind of galvanizes the Jewish. That was in the
1960s?
The 1960s, that's right. Rabbi Shlomo Carlbach comes up with this new idea. He was obviously not the first Jewish Hasidic singer, but he was the most famous and popular singer who took like pop music, the concept of like in like Bob Dylan and all that. And like he brought it to the Jewish world through song. And now it's amazing. You know, I run a Carlbach Minyan. And this totally black hat guy came and we davened together last Shabbos. And I said, come back next week. And he said, sorry, I have a Karlbach minion in my yeshiva. It's a totally black and white yeshiva in the middle, but they're singing Karlbach every on Shabbos morning, not Friday night. Shabbos morning, they're doing Karlbach. So I couldn't get him. But you see what I mean? It's still evolving. It's still getting bigger and bigger and bigger, especially in religious Zionist yeshiva. They almost all use the Karlbach songs. But anyways, this isn't a shiur about Shlomo Karlbach. This is a shiur about Kabbalah. And so you see that Kabbalah has made its way into Jewish practice, in my opinion, in a very positive way. And this one, you know, what's great about it is not only in the Orthodox world, even in, you know, Camp Ramah, in Reform and conservative places, they still do this Kabbalat Shabbat custom. So clearly, Kabbalah has impacted, in my opinion, in a positive way, Judaism in this case. However, I will note that it's not actually a halacha, meaning if you decided not to, if you had to choose between davening Maariv and davening Kabbalat Shabbat, the answer would be Maariv. Certainly, if you had to choose between Mincha, yeah, Mincha wins. Kabbalat Shabbat is a minhag. It's a beautiful thing to do. It's Psalms. I can't even imagine Shabbos without it, but it's not a halacha. It's not an absolute halacha. It's a minhag that the Jewish people have taken upon themselves. Okay? Seder sets, I think, a great example of Kabbalah impacting halacha. Let's keep going with that. What else? Keep thinking about Shabbos.
Is covering the challah because it's jealous?
So no. Covering the challah, I think we've talked about this. Covering the challah is mainly for halachic reasoning. And maybe the thing about the man comes from Kabbalah, but not that I know of.
What about holding the Kabbalah candle?
Like how you hold it?
Or? What about holding it? Like
how tall your husband would be?
Just, oh, the tall husband thing?
Yeah.
I just heard a great explanation of that shiur, of that reason. So, you know, I heard it from my own shiur last year. Last year I gave this shiur in the same week. And I record, sometimes I record them and put them on Y.U. Torah. And I was looking for a Kabbalistic halachim. Yes, but I don't always put them up. I only put them up if they're like schmoozy, and honestly, I'm kind of the only one who listens to them because I just like listen to them. Like I prepare for my own shiur sometimes, and like while I'm running. Anyway, so I'm listening to my own shiur, and I had someone ask, one Midmon girl asked me last year, why do we have to put the tall thing, you know, however tall you do it? So I looked it up because she asked me that question. And it's because, you know, there's an idea that you start off class with a joke. It's mentioned in the Gemara, there's a concept that you want to get people in a good mood, so you start off class. People in the Gemara did it. So we start off our week with a joke. So there's no real thing of however tall you are.
It's a joke? It's a myth. Yes. It's not a real thing. My arm has hurt for years because of that.
Sorry, girls.
Me too. My dad always lowered my arm.
Yeah, you came to the wrong class. What can I say? It is the nature of this class that we debunked some myths. So that is a classical. There is no source for that in Judaism. But there is a thing of laughing. You know, Sephardim sometimes laugh at Havdalah. That's a thing. I'm not going to say it's the most important thing in the world. It's a way of starting off our week with joy and sympathy. So that's nice. But I don't think not about the tongue. Think, go chronologically. That's always an easy way to think about it.
Okay, we got Kabbalat Shabbat.
You got Kabbalat Shabbat. That was great.
Friday night. Kiddush.
Kiddush. Yeah, there's a lot in Kiddush. But what in Kiddush? Standing and sitting. I don't know. I'm not sure if that's...
Drinking half the cup?
Drinking half the cup?
Do you have to drink half the cup or no?
No, that you do, but that's halachic. You're going to do with Kabbalah. Okay, let's have it the following. Think Shavuos. What comes to mind?
Dairy.
Not that I know. It might be supported by Kabbalah.
Morning, all night.
Very good. That one comes from Rav Shlomo Alkovetz. The same night, the same guy had a revelation where Hashem told him, apparently, you got to stay up all night, and it's a big fixing for our soul. And from thus began the custom to stay up all night and learn on Shavuos. So it all began in Tzvat. So that's good to know. And even non-Kabbalistic folk sometimes do that. But that's another example of a minhag. You don't have to do it. It's a nice thing to do. What's another, on a related note, what's another custom of staying up all night? When else do you do that? Hoshana Rabbah. Same idea. It was in the same revelation. Okay. Speaking of Hoshana Rabbah and Simchas Torah, what's one of the highlights in Simchas Torah?
The
for boys, at least.
Dancing
and doing hakafos, right? Where did that come from? Can you guess?
Halacha,
exactly. Kabbalah. Okay. Kabbalah is the source, the Arizal is the source of walking around seven times. By the way, it's also, as Rosh Hashem, some of you at your wedding, your husbands will walk around seven times. Or you will walk around seven times.
Some Sephardis, both the husband and the wife do it.
I don't know what Sephardi
is doing. I was at a Sephardi wedding one time, and they both did it.
I've heard some Sephardi don't do it, but I don't know about Sephardi. I don't remember the last Sephardi wedding I've been to, but I know that Ashkenazim, the girls walk around, and that is from the Arizal. That is from Kabbalah. Sorry.
Halacha hold the Torah on Simchas Torah, or is that from Kabbalah? Like for a boy.
You know, I don't remember. It's definitely not halacha. I'm trying to remember if it's even like a Kabbalistic idea. I'm not sure. It's a good question. Good. Okay. So that's a lot. Obviously, we're not going to go through all of the Kabbalistic customs because there's literally thousands. Okay. That's what I'm trying to show. I'm just trying to show you some of the famous ones to make my point clear that it really has, you know, one day some girl's going to walk up to me like, yeah, Kabbalah, that's for crazy people, mystical people. I've nothing to do with mainstream Judaism. And you're going to remember the shir, and you're going to tell them, no, what about this, that, and the other thing, and so be like flabbergasted. So here's a few more examples. Ushpizin, you familiar with this? When you invite the guests, Avram, Yitzchak, Yaakov, and the women folk, Sarah, right? They all come to your house. That's also Kabbalistic. Have you heard of doing a L'shem Yuchud, or saying B'shem Kol Yisrael before you daven, before you do stuff, before Sfiras HaOmer? Well, now you know. A lot of Kabbalistic and not Kabbalistic people do that. Hini Muchan Mezuman, that's a Kabbalistic thing. Nusach Sfard, you guys know a little bit the difference between Nusach Ashkenaz, Sfardi, and Sfard. This is an important thing to know about. Ashkenazi is like here, okay? Sfardi is like here, and Nusach Sfard is like here, like really close to Ashkenazi, but it's a twist. What's the twist? Chassidim, which is an outbreak from Kabbalah, wanted to bring their Rizal into their Ashkenazi davening, and so they put Kabbalistic interpretations and said things according to their Rizal. So that's Ashkenazim here, Sfard here, and Sfard here. I daven Sfard, which is why my wife daven Sfard, because she goes after me. And that's why we are a little bit different than Ashkenazi, but not too different. Okay? So that's a good thing for you to know. That's also from Kabbalah, based on the Rizal. A few more.
Wait.
Yeah.
You're Ashkenaz.
I'm Ashkenazi.
But you dove in.
But my grandparents are Hasidim.
And they
on both sides. And they were, if they're Hasidim, that means they go by Nusach Sfard, not Sfardi.
Yeah.
And when I moved to Israel, I realized that the Nusach in Eretz Israel in general is Sfard. Most Hezri Yeshivas are Sfard. And the stuff of Eretz Yisrael, for whatever reason, was more often Sfard, because Israel is more Kabbalistically oriented. And since Israel is Sfard, and my family is Sfard, I realized that my dad somehow, like, just messed it up somehow. So I switched back to Sfard. Even though I still get confused sometimes, because I grew up being Ashkenazi, but and they're very similar.
Yeah.
Sfardi people
adopt,
like, can they
adopt Sfard? Anyone can do, you know, you can theoretically switch. But in general, we encourage people to do whatever their tradition is. So I would do what my tradition is. The thing is, my tradition clearly got messed up.
Yeah.
Because I wasn't really supposed to be Ashkenazi. So that was why it was so controversial originally. Okay. Because our time is short, there's a lot more. And maybe we'll talk more about it on Shabbos. Especially Shabbos customs. I think I have a whole session where I'll talk a little bit about we're going to do some Kabbalistic Shabbos customs. But I think I've convinced you pretty well that Halacha and Kabbalah are intertwined in not two different worlds. Yeah? I've convinced you?
Yeah.
Okay, let's do one more myth. I'm going to go 2 minutes over because we came a little late. So, do you have to be 40 and what about women? Do you have to be 40 and what about women? So, let's start with 40. The answer is, what do you think?
No.
Myth or truth? Myth or truth?
Don't we have to be like 50?
You have to be 50? What's the new one?
I think it's true.
I think it's true.
So like almost all of our questions is
like you can't have
almost to, true.
It's not actually.
It's close to
like,
true.
You have to have a enough. Certain amount of like knowledge, right?
It's based on truth,
it's not
but it's not the whole truth.
Also life experience. You have to have a certain amount of life experience.
Right. So let's start from the beginning. Originally in the Gemara says in Chagiga that Kabbalistic esoteric things, Maisa Merkava, was only taught to select individuals, like very, very wise spiritual people. We don't teach it just to anybody. Okay, that's a real thing in the Gemara, for sure. And that's what we all agree, that originally Kabbalah was passed down very, very secretly. Okay? The thing, and what else, to make it clear where this whole 40 concept comes from, the Mishnah in Pirkei Avos says when you turn 40, that's time to study Bina. That's wisdom. And wisdom and Kabbalah go together. And the Shach, who is a commentator on the Shulchan Aruch, specifically does write at one point that you shouldn't learn Kabbalah until you're 40. That's where really this idea comes from. And then Rambam also writes in his book that first you should fill yourself up with meat and bread, i.e. Gemara and Poskim Halacha. And then if you're already wise, you can go and study, you know, mystical things. So for sure, there's a lot of truth into this idea that we should focus on Halacha and not on fluffy Kabbalah. But that's only half the truth. Why is it only half the truth? First of all, we know that there is a lot of huge tzaddikim, like the Ramchal, who studied Kabbalah like crazy and had angels talking to him, or the Arizal, and they died before they were 40. So what does that mean? They're big tzaddikim, they're studying Kabbalah, and they died before they were 40. There's two ways you could read that. Either, clearly you don't have to be 40, right? Or, that's why they died. But we're not going to take that interpretation, because there's lots and lots of other people who didn't die before they were 40, and they studied under 40. So how do we make sense of that? Long story short, the Rambam himself, even after saying that you don't study Kabbalah, talks a little bit about Kabbalah in his book. So how do we make sense of that? The answer is there's two different types of Kabbalah, to make a long story short. There's meditative, practical, mystical Kabbalah, where, I don't know if you've heard about people study God's name and meditate about God's name and spend long hours every day doing mystical things. And sometimes they can even use these mystical powers to harness and, I don't know, create golems and do all sorts of crazy things. And that's the type of stuff that we don't just teach to any random guy. And we're not so into just like getting into that because people could go crazy. But then there's another part of Kabbalah, and that's more like, not practical Kabbalah, but like philosophical Kabbalah. And that might not be forbidden. What we are exposed to today is, I wouldn't even say it's philosophical Kabbalah. Mostly what people like me study is like cliff notes, like spark notes of Kabbalah. If you study a Hasidic sefer like I do, they mention Kabbalistic ideas, but they don't really go into it. They just mention it here and there, and that has nothing to do with the real Kabbalah that was forbidden at the age of 40. It's a totally different thing. And to make matters different, the Arizal and the Hasidic movement is all about, nowadays it's a mitzvah to teach Hasidus, it's a mitzvah to teach certain aspects of Kabbalah, because our generation, as I mentioned before, needs the inspiration and needs the kick and the spirituality that Kabbalah teaches us and the concepts. We don't have to become Kabbalistic experts, but we need at least a taste of Kabbalah to make our Judaism more meaningful. What about women? There, as far as I know, is no difference between men or women in this matter. So the only difference I would say is that, in general, women are not obligated to learn Torah that's not practical, right? If they do it, they get a mitzvah, sure. If you want to just learn stuff, you want to learn Seder Kodshim, you get a mitzvah, you go to Shemayim, it's nice, it's good, but you're not obligated to do it, okay? I am obligated to do it, even if it's not practical. I got to learn the practical stuff first, then I got to learn the even, whatever. So Kabbalah, for the most part, is in that esoteric camp of like, do it if it's fun, we don't have to do it. But on the other hand, for a lot of people, like myself, it brings a lot of chizik, a lot of strengthening of our spirituality and, you know, enhances my halachic observance, and maybe it will viewers too. And thus concludes our little shiur about Kabbalah and Halacha. See you guys tomorrow. Some of you tomorrow, some of you on Shabbos. And I hope you have a wonderful night. Let me ask you while I have all of you. I only have one class left until this semester. You prefer if I don't record because it's like just more chill? I haven't really put them up this semester, but you prefer if I don't? It's fine.
I don't care.
Okay. Great. Have a good night.